I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name is Paul Efron. And my home group's the Express Group, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And it's a privilege and a blessing to be here tonight. I know you were all expecting Russell, and no, I'm just another fat guy. And I'll try to keep you interested at least. I don't know if this is working, James, so I don't know what to tell you. Rachel, come and get them, because he needs them. Russell tracks me everywhere I go. And he wanted to make sure I didn't ruin his name or screw up whatever. So,
hang on.
You know, it's really an honor to be here at that man to do this by Russell, for Russell. And he told me he thinks he's on the third step. Okay, and everybody's shaking their head. I said, well, that's okay, because I'm not going to do anything like the third step. Why should I keep it like normal, okay? What I told him I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it, and we have 50 minutes, and I'll just do it exactly, is I'm going to do all 12 steps in 1 hour. So from now on, do whatever you want on Saturday night. And you'll be able to tell him. And you'll be able to tell him when he gets back, why were you wasting our time, an hour every week, and we got to listen to you? Paul did it all in one night. So it's like 4 minutes a step. Let's see if we can do it. First step. First of all, I really did what I had to do. I don't know what Rush is, actually. I'm a Jim Morrison, Doors, Beatles guy, you know what I'm saying? And that's a whole other story. But that got me my first step, you know? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, my life had become unbearable by the time I got to you people. I'm from New York, in case you have a hearing problem. And the reality is, I'm from the 60s, you know, tune in, turn on, drop out, and I did it all. Okay, like that song goes by Jackson Browne, in 65 I was 17, that's my age, 69 I was 21. Well, by that time, by 1969, I was already in so much trouble, and I was already spiraling so out of control at 21 years of age that I really needed you people then. It took me another 11 years crawling in the streets of New York City, degrading myself, humiliating myself, abusing everyone and anyone I loved, until by the grace of God I was brought to you people. And, you know, we'll get to that in a minute, but so the first step is real very simple. You don't pick up. Okay, I know it sounds like, oh boy, it's rocket science. You don't take the first one, you can't get loaded, no matter what. And that's what was told to me, okay? And if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home, because you're off the hook. And that's what they told me. They said, follow a few simple directions, you'll have a life like Chris just said. Is that who? Chris somewhere? Where is he? I lost him. I thought you went back to Rush or something. I hear Rush, man. I go out there, you know. And, you know, and you'll have a life beyond any comprehension you can have. That's what we offer here. We sell hope here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm, I don't know, cross-addicted, dually, I don't even know what that's about. But anything that I do that affects me from the neck up, I'm in trouble. Okay? And in the 60s, you did it all. Okay, that's the bottom line. You know, I love when they say you don't talk about drugs and Alcoholics Anonymous. The only people that get angry when you talk about drugs and Alcoholics Anonymous are those that are still taking them. The fact of the matter, the fact of the matter is, this is what we got. This is about total abstinence. It's what we got. We live, we love, we laugh. And all right, so now let's get a little bit on here, okay? By 1969, I'd already been arrested 3 times, and I was spiraling down. The arrests were progressing from misdemeanor arrest, public intoxication, to felony arrest, to felony sale of narcotics arrest. I mean, that's what happens, a progressive disease. Wherever you are now, if you pick up, it's going to get a lot worse. And that's a promise, a guarantee. So the first half of the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. That's a truth, and a truth can never be changed. That was the truth the day I got here. It's going to be the truth till the day I die. The second half of the first step, that our lives had become unmanageable, that's a fact. Now, that's a fact that can and does change if you become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and you work the 12 steps of recovery. The truth can never change. The fact does change. And how does the fact change? We come to believe in the second step. We find a manager. It's no real mumbo jumbo. It's no great, like, things, you know, that it's written so simply and specified so directly that now we admit we're powerless. If you're powerless, that means you have no power, so you better find the power. And coincidentally, they send you to the power. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. No one hits you with a magic wand. The first meeting I went to, someone had a t-shirt on, and it said, "I can't, we can." Well, you know what? A lot of years later, I still can't do this alone. I need everyone's help to help pick me up. And together, we're a power much greater than any of us individually. And that's really what it's about. If you're having a problem conceiving or believing or saying, you know, like, I mean, I didn't know when I got here whether I was an agnostic or an atheist, and I found out I was an ignoramus because I really thought that I had the answers, man. You know, from the streets of New York, you don't, like, say, oh, I hope I can find a power. You know, you don't do that. You got to act bad, be bad, you know, whether you are or not. You just, you know, you got to have the walk and the look. So anyway, I'm going to make it real simple. To find a power, I'm going to give you a very simple example. When you go home tonight, it's not going to be a mumbo-jumbo thing. You go home tonight, and wherever your light switch is in your house, turn it on. And what I'm going to tell you right now is when you turn that switch on, when I turn that switch on in my house tonight, I've come to believe that power is going to be there. Now let's process this out a bit. I've come to depend on the fact that power is going to be there. I've come to rely on the fact that power is going to be there. If I choose not to use that power, my life is going to be a lot more difficult. I'll be stumbling around in the dark. So I've come to depend on a power greater than myself that makes my life easier, makes my life simpler, makes my life more full. So my dependence, my reliance on that power has become greater. And it's not anything to do with religion. It's just the fact that without it, I'm in trouble. With it, I have a phenomenal life. So why wouldn't I want more of it? And when it was explained to me that simply, hey, Paul, this is it. Turn on your light and you're going to see. That's the light. And that's how we get here. So anyway, you know, I've had 3-4 sponsors since I'm sober, and I'm going to get to that little bits of times throughout the meeting. Just so you understand my opinion, a sponsor is the second most important thing to get into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. A sponsor is a guide. A sponsor I look at as like a triptych, which they used to have in AAA. Anybody remember that?
Yep.
How old are you? They don't have triptychs anymore. They have Google and computers and MapQuest. So when I got here, it was this, you know. And so a triptych is, let's say you're going from here to New York. And so you say, send me a triptych from here to New York. They send down this whole book. And what it basically says shows you, okay, here you can take 95. And then here there's construction. You got to slow down. And then here you go a little bit further. And you know what? There could be some real dangerous roads. And here you go a little bit further, and there's some lodging. And here you go a little bit further, and a place you can relax. And you know what? That's all the sponsor is. He's telling me about the journey that I'm experiencing because he's experienced it. Real simple. We share our experience, strength, and hope so that someone else can get this gift. That's my responsibility. That's each of our responsibilities. It says it somewhere, I don't know where, but it says whenever anyone anywhere reaches out for the hand of AA, for that I am responsible. I don't care how long I've been here, I better stay responsible or I'm not going to be here for very long. That's just the way it is, okay? So now just to get to, let's get to my first sponsor because this is a cute little story. I came into my first meeting and happened to be a program borrowed from this program that had just started called Narcotics Anonymous. It was one meeting. Same 12 steps and everything else. And I walked in and I'm beaten and I'm petrified. And there's six people in the meeting and some guy shares that he got sober in Trenton State Prison. And he had scars on his face. And you know what? I was pretty afraid of him. And I was tired of spending my life bullshitting people. And I wanted this thing so desperately that I went, I said, Joe, would you be my sponsor? He says, sure. So we start working. Now, I'm not telling you what I'm about to suggest, that it's a good idea. I'm just sharing my experience, strength, and hope. This was 1980. In 1980, for whatever reason, a lot of us were getting involved together with each other, boys and girls, whatever you want to call it. And it's not recommended, James, but it's just what we've done. And so here it is, 90 days. I'm sober 90 days. And I'm living with the love of my life, okay? And she's also sober 90 days. So we're like, we have the greatest thing going in the world. We're going to meetings together. We're living in her boyfriend's house on the intercoastal, because he was on a drug run in the islands somewhere. So she says, move in. When he comes back, you'll leave. Okay, great. I think it's wonderful. We're going to meetings together. It's like the most amazing thing. Meetings, dinners. It was incredible. And I'm on disability insurance, by the way. When I got sober, because I was a mental patient, which maybe we'll get to, they put me on government disability insurance. So I really only had to go to the mailbox on the third of the month, and I was like a paid member of AA for almost 2 years. So anyway, 90 days sober, Joe calls me up. He says, Paul, could you come up to the 101? He lived on the side there. I want to talk to you. I said, sure, what's up? Just come up. I go up to the 101. I knock on. He was in the air conditioning business. I knock on his door. He says, come out for a minute to the truck. He had his truck outside. He goes, and I'm following him, you know, like a puppy dog, because when you have a sponsor, that's what you do. And he goes to his truck, and I'm standing there, and he reaches under the seat of the truck, and he pulls out a .357. And he puts it to my head. And he says, if you're not out of that house by the morning, I'm going to blow your effing brains out. Oh, shit. Now, let me tell you something. I have read this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Forward, backward, numerous times, every sentence, every line, working with others, into action, helping, solutions. Nowhere does it say sponsor pulls peace on picture. No. Just not there. However, I did move out the next day. I'm only sharing truths here. I'm not making this stuff up. Like my friend Don says, somebody should sell tickets here, because they really could, because we have such stories. You know, I'm going to share about coincidence, because I don't believe there's such a thing. I really believe coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. Okay, there are so many inexplicable things that have happened in my life since I'm sober. And before I got sober, I just wasn't awake enough to see them. So I'm just going to tell you one, because it was probably the most impacting for me, and it was right at my first day. I walk into this meeting in the St. Francis Mission on 6th Street in Fort Lauderdale, right next to the courthouse. Not there anymore. And it was the first NA meeting, and I'm sitting down there, and I didn't know why I was there. I wasn't at a bottom. I was so far from my bottom. My bottom was 69. This is 1980. I was, you know, I was getting paid by the government. I didn't have that many people looking for me. I was okay. I wasn't in that much trouble. And I'm away from New York. I was doing all right, you know. So I go up to the guy who took me, and I say, you know, Curtis, thanks for taking me. I'm sorry for bothering you. It was about 5 minutes before the meeting. I said, I'll get home on my own, okay? If I ever need you, I'll give you a call. But this thing isn't for me. I was looking at this stuff. It was a dank, dark room. The major coincidence that happened to me a very, very long time ago, that to this very minute, not only can I explain, but I realize that for me, it was my guiding light, my direction post, to get here and stay here. At or about 8:27 p.m., on February 12th, 1980, as I had enough of this thing without investigating it, and I'm walking out of St. Francis Mission on 6th Street, at that exact minute, in walks a guy from my block in Queens, New York City. I hadn't seen him for 10 years. He hadn't seen me. We ran the streets together. So we talk outside. Somehow I end up back in the room. I pick up a cup of coffee, and I look to the front. Mark was at the front table that night. Mark had been asked to speak at that meeting 3 weeks before that night. Now, you could say that's very odd. I'm going to tell you it's very God. There's no maybes about that. I sat there and I listened to Mark, and he told his drunkalogue and his drugalogue. I didn't need to listen to that. I lived it with him. His arrests were in the papers just like mine, okay? I mean, he was just like me. I knew that he sat up there, but I'm going to tell you when I started listening, when he said, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a drug for 6 months. I knew Mark so well that he couldn't go 6 weeks without a drink or a drug. He couldn't go 6 days without a drink or a drug. As a matter of fact, very much like myself, the only time he ever refused a drink or a drug is if he misunderstood the question. I mean, you know, I wasn't the kind of guy that ever said, no, I've had enough, I'm getting a buzz. You know, I mean, really, come on, this isn't the had enough kind of crowd here. And by the grace of the power, by the grace of you people, I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug since that night. In 2 weeks, I will be celebrating 32 continuous years of sobriety. It's not possible. I can't do that. I can't go 32 days. And when I look back on it, I say, look how amazing this is. I got here 2 months before my 32nd birthday, and I'll be 64 in April. 50% of my life. 50% I was a dirtbag, lowlife, leech, taker, and I've tried for the last 32 years to be giver, lover, and embracer. Okay? And God has showered me with blessings. Showered me with blessings. One day at a time. Okay? So, you know, we're supposed to be on the third step tonight. He said, let me tell you, I'm not getting into any Russell mumbo-jumbo third steps. I'm going to make it real simple, okay? You make a decision. That's all it is a decision. The decision is you're going to go on through the rest of the steps, okay? A decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand them. By the third step, you have no clue, no understanding of anything. It's your sponsor. You know, I'll tell you a third step story. With a guy I sponsored, we were just together the other night. I used to live in the Bay Colony Club, you know, because the government was paying for it. I mean, I had everything going. I had this little Z car, and I'm living on the water, you know. And so Steve, he was ready to do his third step. So I say, all right, come on over, Steve, and just the door will be open, so just come in, because I'll probably be in the shower. So he comes in, and he yells through the shower. I say, yeah. Steve, go in my bedroom and pick up the big book and go to page 63, and I want you to read the third step and get ready. I'll be in there in a minute. Here's the example of willingness in Alcoholics Anonymous. Please keep this in mind. Now, I wasn't like this. In fact, I was 145 pounds, and I was tan. You know, I looked like you know, like a player. You look like a player, but we know you're not. But I look like a player, too. I had the walk and the look and, you know, the whole bit. And I was the man. So I only had to use one towel to wrap me today. Today, they evident. You know what happened? I was on a cruise a few years ago. I got out of the shower, and I looked in the mirror, and all I saw was the letter Q. But anyway, let's get back to this third step. So now Steve's in the bedroom reading this book on my bed. I'm coming out of the shower, I have a towel on, and I walk into Steve, and I say, okay, Steve, on your knees. The willingness that Steve exhibited, by the grace of God, he's coming up on 31 years of continuous sobriety. No questioning, no asking. Just believe that we believe. Believe that nobody's going to hurt you in here. Just believe we need you to get this thing so you can give it to someone else. That's how the whole thing happens. It's no secret, no real, mumbo jumbo. You know, what got my attention, my sponsors were so good to me. I mean, other than Joe with the gun. But the others, the others were really pretty loving. And one of my sponsors, Ray Allen, he used to get my attention with humor. Okay, he couldn't tell me to work the steps, sit home and write. That wouldn't work for me. I failed out of everything I ever had to do where you told me instructions. So this was just like generic. And he says to me when I got here, he says, Paul, you know what? You remind me, you have a real attitude problem. And Alcoholics Anonymous is about changing the attitude. He says, you remind me of a 6'6" wrestler who marries a 5-foot-tall little girl. And they go away on their honeymoon. And they're in the honeymoon suite, and the wrestler pulls off his very large overalls, and he throws them across the bed at her. And he says, here, why don't you put these on? She looks at him, what do you mean? I'd be swimming in those. They're 3 times my size. I can't. He says, that's right. I want you to know from day one who wears the pants in this family. Well, she thinks for a minute. She sits down on the bed. She reaches under her tiny little miniskirt, pulls off her tiny little panties, and throws them at him. And says, here, why don't you get into those? He says, what do you mean? I can't get into those. She says, that's right, and you never will until you change your attitude. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is, an attitude adjustment. If you don't change it, you're not going to stay here. If you do change it, great things will come to pass, and it's a promise. So anyway, we got to get to the fourth step, and what is the fourth step? Just a writing. This is where you really have to start working and writing and doing something physical, okay? And what are you going to do? You can either write a life story or you're going to do it like here with Mr. and Mrs. Brown and the big book and the columns and the lines. I was told to write an autobiography, my first one. I've done multiple fourth steps and thank God multiple fifth steps because you never get to wherever it is you think you get. We're always right here. So we're continually growing, God willing. So my first one, I wrote this incredible autobiography. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know whether to call my sponsor or call Warner Brothers. Because it was just like that incredible. Okay? Very little of it was true, but it was just that. And, you know, then you find somebody, you find this sponsor, this person you've decided to trust with the whole deal, the whole enchilada. Okay, and the way you do that, by the way, you know, when you're getting a sponsor initially, and this is just what everyone does, you say, ask someone to be your sponsor, and you give them a piece of information. Not a real dramatic piece, just something. And you wait a week or two to see if it got around. And then you give them another little piece, a little deeper, until you get to the point where you know, intuitively, inside and out, you can tell this person anything. And that's what is the necessity in here, to come to believe that this other individual is there for you unconditionally. And I've had the privilege of being a sponsor for many and being sponsored by a few, and it's the greatest reward and experience in the world. You can't put a price tag on that. So anyway, and thank God when I was, so Fred and I would go and meet. That was my second sponsor, Fred T., God rest his soul. And we go and meet, and I start going through this litany of what I've written. Thank God he never looked at me, ever, and said, you did what? You know, like looking and saying, you know, like in a sense of, how could you be such a dirtbag and in my house? And instead what he did was he shared with me stuff in his life that was equally as tragic, equally as humiliating, equally as demeaning, equally as embarrassing, and we had the common bond. And it was not a reading experience. I had written for a day. I mean, his pages. He said, put it down. He says, just look at it for a thing to give you a key, and then let's share. We're going to share tonight, Paul. And 4 or 5 hours later, it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Okay? Because that's the fifth step. And why would you want to take this fifth step? Why are you going to share with someone the deepest, darkest secrets of your entire life? And I'm not going to tell you all the reasons you want to do that. I'm going to tell you the one main one. Because it says it at the first page of the fifth step of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, if you don't do this step, invariably you're going to get drunk. My entire life was spent with invariably doing what I wasn't supposed to do and invariably ending up with the consequences. By the time I got here, I was so beat. I was so pleading for an answer. I didn't know what it was, and I thank God today that you people showed me that it's real here, and it's all about surrender. It's all about giving up. It's all about saying, I don't know. It's all about asking for help. And my sponsor would always say to me, Fred would always say, he says, you know, you're very fortunate. He says, you have the gift of desperation. I'm going to tell you something. 32 years ago, I had the gift of desperation. Today, I have the gift of desperation. Different thing. I'm looking for more. Ray always said to me, Ray Allen, he says, Paul, you're feeling pretty good. I said, I'm feeling great. He says, let me tell you something. That's only the tip of the iceberg. And as any iceberg, most of it is underwater. You can't even see it yet. He says, keep doing what you're doing and great things will come to pass. This isn't something where you just come on Saturday night and you hang out and like you don't feel better and your life doesn't get better, because then none of us would be here. I would not be here tonight unless you people had given me a life that's not even believable. And I've got issues, and we all have issues, so what? I've not found an issue or a reason or an excuse to pick up a chemical since I've been here, since you people gave me that promise that I don't have to. How do you not pick up the first one? You don't. You make a phone call. I'll tell you one great story from Ray that so impacted me. He was sober, bouncing in and out of the program for a few years, and he was from Brooklyn, and he was, you know, a little beach bum, the greatest guy in the world. And he says that he was in a meeting, and some guy comes up to him and says, Ray, I'm going to give you my phone number for when you want to drink, because you're going to drink, and I want you to call me before you drink. And Ray looked at him, and he says, Dan, I'm 3.5 years sober. I haven't had a drink in 3.5 years. Why would you do this? He says, Ray, you're not sober, and you're never going to get sober unless you change. You're going to drink again, and you better call me before you do. Now, the reason I'm sharing this story is because it was shared hundreds of times with me by Ray, personally and from the podium. 2 days later, he found himself in a gin mill. 2 days. And he sits at the bar and he orders his drink. And the drink and the change come to the bar. And he remembered what Dan said. So he says, you know what? I'm going to go to the phone booth right here. And I'm going to call Dan before I get loaded. So he'll know where I am when I need the help and he'll pick me up. He told me to call first. I'm going to do that. He goes to the telephone booth. He talks to Dan. He gets out of the phone booth. He leaves the booze and the change on the bar. And he walks out, never to have drank again. Ray's sobriety date was March 23rd, 1956. God rest his soul. He was a major involved person in Alcoholics Anonymous in New York City. And then he came down here and helped thousands of people down here. The mind can always be changed. Once you pick up that drink or drug, then the compulsion sets in. Initially, it's an obsession. That can be changed. Share it. It'll be changed. Once the compulsion sets in, all bets are off. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know how bad it's going to go, but it's not going to be pretty. So if you're here, stay here. Then we get to the 6 and 7 steps. And after you're here a while, that's really the meat and potatoes of the program. Okay, the 6th step is we ask God.
We're
in Tyler. That's weird. I've never forgotten that. obviously I need to. We were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. What defects? The ones we just wrote about and shared in the fourth step. Our whole life of being maladjusted. And I love the way this book says, we're maladjusted to life. We're incompetent of dealing with the world. So we're asking God, we're entirely ready. Nobody is ever entirely ready, by the way. Trust me. No, I mean, just telling you, it's not a possibility. But when the pain of the pain gets great enough, then the pain of the change doesn't seem that bad. When you're in here and you're in a fetal position in pain, then you're going to do one of two things. You're going to either pick up and run, or you're going to get to the tools, the blueprint, the answers to living, and you're going to cry out to God for help, and help will come, and the first person will appear. So when you get sick and tired of whatever you're doing after you're sober, then you get entirely ready. And then you get to the seventh step. And Ray always said this to me. It's the shortest step of all of them. It's only seven words. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. The most powerful seven words in this program. You know, these 12 steps have 200 words total. From the beginning of first step to the end of the 12th, it's exactly 200 words. And if you like me and you don't believe me, please go home tonight and read them. Because count them, I mean. Because the first time I heard that, I'll never forget it. I had 6 or 9 months. I was at the 12 step. There's this guy, Jim Monahan, doing the 12 steps. And he said that. I said, how would this guy know this 200? I went home. As soon as I got home, I opened this book and I counted it. Trust me. Don't trust me. It's 200 words. So anyway, Ray would say that. The most powerful is we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Please, I can't take this anymore. You know, what are the shortcomings? They're your seven deadly sins. That's just the basic down. And if you can't remember them as I couldn't, I'll give you a cute little way to remember them. Pagels. Pride, anger, greed, jealousy, lust, envy, and sloth. Pagels. Pride, anger, greed, jealousy, lust, envy, and sloth. And any time I'm in trouble today, because one of those defects is taking over my life, and I have to beg God to please don't let me run any further with this, because I know where the eventual end will be. And so we try to stay the course, and we're all going to make mistakes, you know. So what? I mean, that's why they make erasers on pencils. We're all, you know, human becomings. Nobody gets here and gets perfect. I promise you that. And anybody that tries to have that halo around their head in AA, it soon becomes a noose. Trust me, I've watched it happen. I've watched those perfect AA guys. Doesn't happen. There's no such thing. We're a defective group. What, are you kidding me? You look around this room, there's more felony convictions in this room than half of these people look like they're in the witness protection program. And all of a sudden they're going to become lily white? I don't think so. It doesn't happen that way. God has a lot of power, but not that much. Come on. Ray also told me you grow like a tree, not like a weed. You dig your roots deep in the soil. So when the storms and adversity of life come up, you won't get blown away. A weed gets blown away when there's storm. A tree has its roots deep down, and it won't blow away. And then we get to the eighth and ninth step. And the eighth is real simple. You're making a list of everybody you screwed in your life. I mean, really, that may not be the way it's written here, but that's what it means, okay? And where do you get this list? Well, you've written it in the fourth step. You've written your resentments. You've written everybody you wronged, everybody that wronged you. Because I'll tell you what, if you're here for any length of time and you get into this resentment, anger, and fear, that's the triangle of self-obsession. And like Ray always said, a resentment is like peeing down your own leg. You're the only one who feels it. You don't want to do that here. You want to be, I mean, actually, if you had a terrible resentment against someone, and it's happened to me. Oh, I hate that guy. I can't believe. And then I go to a meeting and he's speaking. I mean, really, I'm not getting much out of that meeting. So I go to another meeting and he's the secretary. I mean, it just, so you better get rid of it or you're not going to stay here. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. So you make the list, okay? And then we get to the ninth step, and it says we may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I'm going to tell you one ninth step story about how not to do the ninth step, okay? Because I can see you guys are the kind that do everything right. So I'll tell you about how not to do it, because I'm so impressed at the vibrations. This is how you don't do the ninth step. Obviously, the people we hurt the most is our family and our relations, because they're the closest, they're the easiest. My sister, I totally ruined her life in every way possible. I mean, I abused her, not physically, but verbally, and what I did. She was 3 years younger than me. Well, she is 3 years young. So I'm sober now. I did my fourth step when I had 5-6 months. Now I'm on the way up, and I say, you know what? I better write Tina a letter. And I write her this incredible, unbelievable letter. I mean, and I'm a pretty good writer, and I write this amazing letter, Tina, about my whole life, and I am so sorry. And two things with that letter I need to share with you. Number one, it was such a good letter, I didn't feel I needed to share it with my sponsor. That was number one. As a matter of fact, number two, I felt it was going to become the standard letter for the ninth step in Alcoholics Anonymous. They were going to put it in the grapevine. What to do when you hurt a family member? This is the answer by Paul E. I swear to God. And the third thing that I did incorrectly in that is I didn't have an eighth step list. I just, well, I went right, oh my God, I gotta save Tina, I gotta help Tina, and like that. Let me share with you what happened. I nailed it. Thank God I had the foundation I had in Alcoholics Anonymous, because 2 weeks later I got the answer. And the answer, my sister is also a very good writer. She wrote me a 2-page letter. I'm just going to share with you the first paragraph. Dear Paul, how do you expect me to forgive you? You ruined my life. When I was 17, I had to leave home because of you and move to San Francisco because I couldn't be anywhere near you because of what you were doing to our family. And she went on and on. And obviously now I'm at my sponsor's on his couch in a fetal position. Thank God today, just to fast forward, my sister and I are like this. I made the proper amends in the proper time, in the way it's supposed to be done. And I thank God that that misstep, that mistake, that God was able to keep me from really any further medical destruction or medicated destruction. And Tina and I are in great shape today, okay? Because I did it properly. You know, you do it in a row. That's the way. I mean, you do it initially however you want. I mean, I put down the drinks and drugs, and I went right to the 12th step for a long time. Because what else did I have to talk about? Well, I was on the streets. Now, if you're on the streets, I could help you. Follow me, you know. And that's really what we did early on. And you know what? Then that got old. So now we get to the 10th step. It says we continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Very simply, the 10th step, I don't believe in this maintenance stuff. The only maintenance I was on was methadone maintenance. There's no 10th step that's a stay here. It's a continual growth. Alcoholics Anonymous is about continually growing. So what I'm doing in the 10th step is I'm clearing out the garbage of today so I can start tomorrow fresh. Because if I don't clear out today's garbage, then it's going to fester. And it's going to build up. And tomorrow it'll be a little greater. And if I don't clear it out tomorrow, then the next day, and eventually what am I going to have is a house full of garbage. And then I will not be here for very long. So you need to keep it current, to keep it in the now, and to continue to follow this process. Now we get to the 11th step. And the 11th step is very, very simple. And it's a long step. And everything. Oh, you know what? That's pretty weird. Oh. I was going to say, I knew that I took, and I haven't even read one of these. So funny. I sit home, and I, like, take these notes about what I want to say. I haven't looked at it. I don't have any idea what's on this. You know, but, like, what can I tell you? Anyway, the 11th step, which is a very long step, We saw it through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood it, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to... I swear to God, you know, you might... I don't know where you'd want to be, but it wouldn't be... Anyway, let me cut it real simply. We saw it, we looked for. Tells you how, through prayer and meditation. What are we trying to do? We're trying to improve. What are we trying to prove? Our conscious contact with God. What God? The God we found in the second step, that we enhanced in the third step, that has gotten us through the rest step. That's all we're trying to do. We're trying to improve it as we understood him. What are we praying? Only for knowledge. That's all we're praying for. Knowledge of his will, what he wants us to do, and the power to carry that out, beginning and end of that step. You don't need to get into mumbo jumbo. You started at the second step. You came to believe. You turned on the lights. Whatever you had to do. And the fact is, little by slowly, now you're up there and you want to continue. And you're feeling, that's another thing. I put continue in front of every step, every day. Tonight being here, I'm continuing to come to believe that a power greater than myself. And I'm continuing to make a decision. And I'm continuing to try to improve. And I'm continuing to ask God for help with my defects. And now we get to the 12th step. And the bottom line is, that's what keeps us here. Okay? We tried. We tried after having had a spiritual awakening, which is what happens when you've gone through these steps. You've had a spiritual awakening, a change. What is that? A change different from everything I used to feel, think, or believe, and it's now totally different. And that had to happen from a power greater than myself. So now I've had this spiritual awakening. What am I going to do with this? Having had a spiritual awakening, where did it come from? It came as the result of these steps. Not a result, not by coincidence. As the result of these steps, you must have a spiritual awakening. There's not that you might, you must. If you work these 12 steps, you incorporate them, you do them a couple of times, you're going to have this spiritual awakening. Okay, then what are we trying to do after having this spiritual awakening? We're finding someone in the gutter, and we're trying to carry the message to let them know, you know what, you don't have to die from addiction and alcoholism. Come with me, I've got a better way. You don't, like, tell them, you don't give them lessons. You say, come with me, walk with me, and we'll walk together, and you'll have a life that's not even believable. This isn't something where you mail in assignments. It isn't something where you get graded on AA, you did it good, you do AA good if you don't get loaded, okay? And then if you get a little bit better, and you have someone that you're picking up and bringing with you, then how can you have a problem? How can you have a problem if you're thinking of someone else? We come in here, we're selfish, self-centered, gutter rats, I'm sorry, but that's really what I was. And we stay here a little while and we become selfless. People say it's a selfish program. Absolutely not. It's a selfless program. The less I think of me and the more I think of you, the happier I am and the more peaceful I am. That's what it's about, letting go of my ego, my psychosis of thinking that I'm really important, letting it go and realizing that I'm a cog in the wheel, a little spoke in the wheel, and, you know, do the best I can, you know. So I had Ray, I had Joe as my sponsor, then Fred as my sponsor. I need to tell you this one story about Fred. Fred told me, Paul, I want you to call me every day at 5:30. He says, I don't care, just to tell me where you were, and tell me where you're going that night, so I know that you're still sober. Call me every day at 5:30. And I did. I was so petrified about doing this thing wrong, I followed most of the directions. Every day, 5:30, I called him. Let's fast forward. I'm sober a year and a half. My life's getting better. Now I am living on the Intercoastal. Now I am sponsoring some people. Now I'm speaking a few places. So one Sunday morning at the one-on-one club, I go over to Fred. I said, Fred, you know what? I have a resentment. That's a word we learn in here, by the way. You learn it early on. You're pissed off. You know, I mean, what's a resentment? And he says, oh, really? What is that? I said, Fred, listen to me. You asked me to call you every day at 5:30. And I have, and I haven't missed a day. And Fred, in all that time, you haven't called me once. Let me tell you what happened. Fred had these little glasses, and he looked at me. And without missing a beat, he took the glasses off and he said, "You know what, Paul? As soon as you have something I want, I'll be sure to give you a call." Now, if you said that today to someone, they report you to General Service. I can't believe how mean they were. Oh, my God, I thought you were supposed to love me. And you know what? I was so grateful, man. And you know, by the way, when before Fred died and long before that, he and I became golf partners. We played every weekend together. I was the person that took him for the last 2 years to all of his chemo treatments. God rest his soul. We developed a relationship. He was at the bris of my son, who's now 26 years old. Okay? The fact of the matter is, a relationship has to be created. It has to be embraced. And it can only happen one day at a time. As we learn to trust, we let go of our armor, of our protective shield, and we realize, come in, please. We need you. Welcome. And let's embrace each other. And then the last part of the 12th step, which is what we're all going to do for the rest of our lives, is try to practice these principles in all our affairs. It's a virtual impossibility. I still, somewhere near the surface, still like that quick money deal. I still, somewhere near the surface, still like those strange, beautiful women that happen not to be my wives. And you know what? That's okay to say that. I mean, really. The key is I can't act on it today. Why? Because if I act on that today, I will slowly be unworking these 12 steps. And I don't know where that will end me. So I'm very cautious. I'm very grateful to this power that has saved my life. And I don't want to smack him in the face. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I only want to, like, give him, because the way I look at it is I try to help a lot of people. And I don't know that I do it that much out of really wanting to help people, although it makes me feel good. But I play this little game, and I figure God's looking down from wherever he is, and when he makes the decision about who's going to live and who's going to die, and he looks down at my little corner, and I'm always helping somebody. Equally as important, I always have someone that I'm thinking of helping next. And so what I think is God looks down, and he says, "You know what? He's so freaking busy down there. I'm going to leave him for a little while longer." And I mean, that's my little game I play. Not to say it's rational. I'm not telling you to play it. It's my game, you know. You know, there's something else, a cute little thing. Somebody, I was once speaking at a meeting, and I'm praising God and saying all of these things. And I'm saying, you know, God has kept me clean and sober. And I asked God for help, And so some guy came up to me after the meeting, and he looks at me, and he gets in my face a little bit. He says, "Let me ask you a question. How do you know it's God that's doing all these things to you?" And I looked at him. I didn't miss a beat. I said, "Because he's the only one I asked." And that's what's happened to me since I've been here. I've went to the source. The source hasn't let me down. And it continues to get better. And I'm going to close in a minute here because I promised everybody that I wouldn't go over time. And then obviously now, Saturday night we could go party because Russell does not need to come back here. And I'm going to tell you what I do every night before I go to sleep. I go home and I play this little game with God, that God has a helper, and the helper's name is Max. And every night God checks in with Max and he says, "So Max, what's going on down there?" He says, "God, it seems like 2 billion people, they're very unhappy with what they do for a living. The carpenters want to be doctors. The doctors want to be lawyers. Lawyers want to be salesmen. Nobody's happy with what they're doing." He says, "Okay." He says, "What else, Max?" He says, "God, it seems that 30% of the people, 3-4 billion people, they live on the East Coast. They want to be on the West Coast. The ones that live in California want to be in Europe. The ones that are in Italy want to be in Thailand. Nobody's happy with where they are." God says, "Okay, is there anything else, Max?" He says, "Yeah, it seems literally 50% of the people in relationships that are talking to us, they're all very unhappy with their person they're with. The men want to be with another woman. The women want to be with another man. I mean, everybody is unhappy and complaining about their life partner." John says, is there anything else, Max? He says, yeah, just one thing, God. He says, there's this one lunatic in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He gets on his knees every single night, and he says, thanks. And God looks to Max. He says, you know what, Max? Give that guy anything he wants. Thanks for listening.
Observance of the seventh tradition, which states every age group, all the people involved in signing up for a contribution to the bath, we will be in cash.